Imagine trying to calculate a marathon runner's speed. But every coach in the world uses a completely different, mathematically impossible formula.
Right. Yeah. Total nightmare.
Exactly.
Correct.
Like one coach calculates it based on the runner's stride length, and then another strictly uses their heart rate. A third insists, the only variable that matters is the thickness of the foam in their shoes. If you try to compare the runners, it's just chaotic noise. None of the math talks to each other.
No, of course not.
And you never actually learn how fast anyone is running. And the crazy thing is, that is exactly what has been happening for decades in the incredibly high-stakes world of metallurgy.
It really is. I mean, it's the definition of diagnostic muddy waters. And in a rigorous scientific field, having a plethora of conflicting mathematical answers is, well, it's often far, far worse than having no answers at all.
Right.
It creates this illusion of understanding that just masks a fundamental ignorance.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission for today's deep dive is to explore how scientists finally cut through this chaotic web of conflicting research. We're diving into a 2022 paper from the journal Materials, Science, and Technology.
Yeah, a really fascinating piece of work.
It really is. It's titled Critical Assessment 41, Strength of Undeformed Perlite, authored by HKDH Padeshia and Aparao Chintha. And we're going to look at how they solved a highly specific mystery regarding how to measure the strength of this material, undeformed perlite, and how, by finally applying a rigorous mathematical framework, they revealed a massive plot twist about the materials themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a poem involved, but we will get to that later.
Yes, the poem is a great touch.
Right.
But to really appreciate the breakthrough here, you have to understand the specific problem these authors inherited.
Okay, set the stage for us.
So the paper targets the proof strength of undeformed perlite and how that strength depends on something called its interlamellar spacing.
Right, let's ground this visually for everyone listening, because perlite isn't just a single uniform substance, right?
No, not at all.
It has a layered structure. Think of like a microscopic zebra, or maybe a highly compressed layer cake made of alternating sheets of two different materials. You have ferrite, which is relatively soft, and cementite, which is hard.
Exactly.
And the interlamellar spacing is simply the distance between those layers. So the tighter the spacing, the stronger the metal.
Right, that is the foundational concept. But when the authors looked back at the existing research attempting to calculate exactly how that spacing dictates the strength, they just didn't find any consensus.
Yeah, the abstract notes, they found a plethora of relationships.
Which is really just a polite academic way of saying the literature was a total mess. Every previous analysis had failed to resolve this.
See, I have to push back on the scientific community here. Like, how does a field as precise as material science let this happen?
That's a fair question.
Why does it take a formal critical assessment in 2022 just to figure out why past scientists failed to measure something as fundamental as layer spacing and strength?
Well, it happens because the culture of scientific publishing, it often incentivizes immediate solutions over fundamental truths.
Ah, right.
An early researcher proposes an equation that works perfectly for their specific batch of perlite. It gets published. A decade later, someone tests a slightly different batch. The old equation fails, so they just invent a new one that fits their specific data points.
Piling on more math.
Exactly. Decades go by, and suddenly you have this impenetrable thicket of contradictory equations, and nobody stops to clear the brush. Padeshia and Chintha didn't just want to throw yet another new formula onto the pile. They wanted to actually diagnose the disease in the literature.
You mentioned proof strength earlier, and the paper frequently discusses yield strength. Before we look at how they fixed the math, I think we need to understand the mechanism, what physically happens when a metal yields.
That is a crucial distinction. In materials science, yielding isn't breaking or snapping. Yielding is the exact moment a material permanently deforms. It's the point of no return. Like if you bend a paperclip slightly, it springs back. That's elastic
Right.
deformation.
It holds its shape.
But if you push it just a bit harder, it stays bent. That moment it permanently gives way is the yield point.
And at the atomic level, how does that happen? Because, I mean, a piece of steel feels completely solid to me.
It feels solid, sure, but at the microscopic level, it's a crystalline grid of atoms. When a metal yields, whole planes of atoms are physically sliding past one another.
Wow.
The force required to initiate that atomic avalanche is the yield strength. And the tighter those alternating layers in the perlite are packed together, the more microscopic walls you have blocking those atomic planes from sliding.
Which brings us to how they actually cut through the noise. The authors state that by analyzing all the published data, they found one specific equation, The Hall-Pitch equation was the best suited to explain this relationship. But they make a very sharp distinction here. They state the Hall-Pitch equation isn't just an empirical fit, but that it works when examined in a Bayesian framework. Furthermore, they say it's the only relationship that gives a physically meaningful value to the friction stress.
Right. Those two concepts, the Bayesian framework and physically meaningful friction stress, those are the actual scalpels they use to dissect the bad literature.
Let's take friction stress first. I mean, friction stress sounds like two things rubbing together, like tires on asphalt.
Yeah, that's the common association.
But we're talking about pulling a solid piece of metal apart. So what is the actual physical mechanism here?
What's fascinating here is that friction stress is really the baseline inherent resistance of the metal's crystal lattice itself.
Okay.
Imagine trying to push a massive heavy rug across a hardwood floor. It takes a huge initial shove just to overcome the friction of the floor and get the rug to budge at all.
Right, that initial resistance.
Exactly. In a metal lattice, the atoms are locked together. Friction stress is that baseline resistance you have to overcome just to get the very first atomic plane to start sliding.
Okay, so it's a tangible, physical property. It's like the stickiness of the atomic grid.
Precisely. And this is where the previous researchers went completely off the rails with their empirical fits.
How so?
Well, an empirical fit just means you drew a mathematical line that successfully connected the dots on your graph.
But wait, if the math connects the data points perfectly, why isn't that good enough? I mean, if the curve fits the data, doesn't that mean the equation is right?
Yes, but let's take that a step further. You can invent an incredibly complex mathematical equation to connect any random scatter of dots. That doesn't mean your equation describes the actual laws of physics.
Ah, I see.
If an older equation had a beautiful empirical fit on the graph, but to make the math work, it calculated a friction stress that was a negative number.
Oh, a negative friction stress would mean the atomic lattice is essentially pushing itself apart without any outside force. It's describing a material that literally cannot exist in our universe.
Exactly. The math is essentially hallucinating. It's a mathematical coincidence completely detached from physical reality. And that is where the Bayesian framework comes in.
Right. Because for our listeners who might not be statisticians, a Bayesian framework is fundamentally a way of updating the probability of a hypothesis based on prior knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So how did they use that as a weapon against these bad equations?
Well, the Bayesian framework doesn't just ask, does this line fit the dots? It ruthlessly penalizes models that demand impossible physical realities.
Okay.
If an equation requires a negative friction stress to work, the Bayesian framework looks at our prior knowledge of physics and drops the probability of that equation being true to zero.
So it's a filter.
It acts as an intense stress test. And out of the plethora of equations proposed over the decades, the Hall-Pitch equation was the only one that survived. It gave a physically meaningful, positive value for the friction stress.
It's so cool. By demanding that the math reflect physical reality, they stripped away decades of noise.
Yes, they did.
And by finally getting a clear view, they accidentally uncovered a brand new, incredibly counterintuitive mystery about the materials themselves.
The ferrite paradox.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The paper states that they discovered that ferrite in interstitial free iron is, at an identical length scale, stronger in yield than the ferrite within perlite.
Yeah, and to grasp why this is so shocking, we need to clearly define the players.
Okay, let's do it.
Ferrite, as we mentioned earlier, is the softer component of perlite. It's essentially pure iron. Interstitial free iron takes that purity to an absolute extreme.
How so? What does interstitial free physically mean?
Okay, picture the iron atoms as a massive grid of tightly packed bowling balls.
Got it.
Usually there are tiny gaps or interstices between those bowling balls. Impurities, like tiny marbles of carbon or nitrogen, get wedged into those gaps.
And those marbles would jam up the works. They would make it harder for the planes of bowling balls to slide past each other.
Exactly. They increase the strength. So interstitial free iron has been meticulously stripped of all those tiny marbles. It is a perfectly clean grid of iron atoms.
Okay.
Because it's so clean, with nothing jamming the layers, it should be incredibly soft and easy to deform.
Right. And then we have the ferrite that is trapped inside the perlite, Perlite is that layer cake, right? Slices of ferrite sandwiched between rigid walls of hard cementite.
Correct. So we are comparing perfectly clean, unburdened ferrite on its own against ferrite that is locked inside a highly complex, layered, heavily reinforced matrix.
Which is what makes their discovery so wild.
Yes.
You would naturally assume that the rigid, layered environment of the perlite would reinforce the ferrite.
It would.
You'd assume the complex structure makes the individual components stronger, or at least raises the threshold before it yields. But they found the exact opposite. The solo ferrite, the perfectly clean iron standing all on its own, was actually stronger and resisted yielding better than the ferrite trapped in the perlite.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the absolute most crucial phrase in their discovery is at an identical length scale.
Why is identical length scale the linchpin of this whole paradox?
Because in material science, size almost always dictates strength. If you confine a metal to a tiny microscopic space, you limit the room it has for those atomic avalanches to start.
Right.
Smaller usually equals stronger. So a skeptic could easily say, well, the isolated ferrite is a big chunk, and the ferrite and the perlite is crushed into microscopic layers. Obviously, they behave differently. The sizes are completely different.
So by ensuring they compare them at an identical length scale, they isolated the variables. They proved it wasn't the physical size of the space dictating the strength.
Exactly. By controlling for size, they proved that the fundamental environment was the culprit. Being locked into the complex layered matrix of the perlite was actively degrading the ferrite's yield strength.
Oh, wait, mechanically, how does that make any sense? Why would surrounding a soft metal with hard walls make it give up and yield faster?
It comes down to the boundaries. The cementite layers aren't just smooth, passive walls. At the microscopic level, where the ferrite meets the cementite, the atomic grids just don't line up perfectly. They clash.
Like trying to zip together two zippers that have different sized teeth?
That is a perfect way to visualize it. That mismatched boundary creates immense, localized structural stress. Those interfaces essentially act as breeding grounds for dislocations.
Dislocations.
Yeah, which are the microscopic defects that trigger the atomic sliding we talked about earlier. So, instead of reinforcing the ferrite, the perlite structure is actively injecting stress and weaknesses into it right at the boundary line.
Wow.
That's why it yields faster than the pure, isolated iron. The complex system itself is the source of the vulnerability.
That is a beautiful piece of scientific sleuthing.
It really is.
Which naturally brings us to a really surprising element tucked into the source material we reviewed for this deep dive.
Right.
Right alongside these dense, rigorous publications spanning from 2021 through a fifth edition in 2024, there is a poem.
Yes. A very evocative one titled Cambridge to London Liverpool Street.
It's ostensibly about a train ride. But given everything we just discussed about stripping away the noise of bad math to reveal a hidden truth of the material, the thematic parallels are impossible to ignore. I'm going to read it for you.
Please do.
When the train left the station, the track fell still. No touch, no groan, no screech. Unhitched from the world. But wait, what be this which has only just appeared?
It's a wonderful piece of writing. How are you mapping that imagery onto Padacia and Chintha's research?
Well, to me, the touch, groan, and screech of the track represents that decades-long plethora of conflicting equations.
Right.
All those empirical fits that didn't actually mean anything physically, just a loud metallic grinding of researchers throwing bad math at each other.
A literal screeching of diagnostic muddy water.
Yes. And the train leaving the station, becoming unhitched from the world, falling perfectly still, that is the application of the Bayesian framework.
Oh, I like that.
It's the mechanism of silencing the noise. It strips away the impossibilities, strips away the negative friction stresses, and leaves you in this space of quiet physical reality.
This raises an important question, then, about those final two lines, because the silence isn't the end of the journey. The poem ends with a sudden, unexpected revelation. But wait, what be this which has only just appeared?
That has to be the ferret paradox, right?
Unquestionably, I think your mapping is spot on. They weren't hunting for a paradox when they started this critical assessment. They just wanted to quiet the screeching tracks of the literature and fix the math of undeformed perlite.
Yeah.
But when the noise finally stopped, when the math was finally aligned with a physically meaningful friction stress, the true hidden nature of the metal revealed itself out of nowhere.
That's amazing.
The realization that free ferrite yields fundamentally differently than ferrite trapped within the perlite structure, even at the exact same length scale. It was sitting there the whole time, completely obscured by the noise of bad equations.
So what does this all mean? Let's tie this journey back to you, the listener. We started in a chaotic landscape, a literal plethora of conflicting relationships trying to calculate the strength of a layered metal.
Yeah.
We saw how the authors refused to just accept mathematical curves that merely fit a graph. They demanded a Bayesian framework that enforced physical reality. They demanded a physically meaningful friction stress.
Right.
They silenced the noise. And in doing so, they didn't just solve an old problem, they uncovered a totally new mechanism regarding how complex structures can actually weaken their individual components.
They proved that in an era of absolute information overload, which we all navigate daily, whether we are metallurgists or not, finding the true signal in the noise requires frameworks that offer real underlying meaning, not just numbers that happen to look good on a spreadsheet.
It's a powerful reminder that sometimes you have to break down the existing dogmas and quiet the screeching tracks of conventional wisdom before you can actually see what's standing right in front of you.
Which leaves me with a final thought I'd like you to mull over as you go about the rest of your day. Think about the mechanics of that ferret paradox.
Yeah.
Think about the ferret trapped within the complex clashing layers of the perlite versus the clean, interstitial-free iron standing on its own. In your own life, in your career trajectory, or in your creative pursuits, are there times when integrating yourself into a larger, highly complex system, like a rigid corporate structure or a massive multi-tiered project, actually decreases your individual yield strength?
Wow. Yeah.
Might there be moments where you two, just like that perfectly clean iron lattice, would actually be vastly stronger and capable of enduring much more stress if you stepped away from the mismatched boundaries of the matrix and stood entirely on your own?